Hello, and welcome to episode 47 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Nancy Florine, president of the Montgomery County Council in Montgomery County, Maryland. How are you doing today, Nancy?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. The first question I'd like to ask you is, what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
Well, how long is this conversation going to go on for?
Right.
I have been involved in public policy issues really since the early 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
I got involved in local land use debates as an attorney.
Hmm.
I litigated on behalf of communities mm-hmm. with respect to their concerns with about development.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was appointed to the Montgomery County Planning Commission in 1986, and I served there for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the organization that reviews development. It drafts master plans for the community mm-hmm. and for the county.
Mm-hmm.
It does the legwork for the county council
hmm.
on a lot of policy issues
mm-hmm.
having to do largely with development.
Mm-hmm.
After that time, I was in private practice again as an attorney, also representing communities,
mm-hmm.
largely other things, but largely communities and land use type issues. Then, after that, I did a couple of things. I became a mayor of the town of Garrett Park.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first foray into actual representational politics where, I had to get elected and the like.
Straight for mayor. Didn't go for city councilman.
I kind of like to be in charge.
Okay. Were you chair of the Planning Commission?
No, I was vice chair of the Planning Commission, but I wasn't appointed in the 80s and early 90s. I was just a member. I was not in charge of that.
Okay.
I was not the chairperson. And you were
appointed by the county council.
That's right.
Now, why would a politician even know you? Why would they? There are lots of people who they could appoint. Was it because of your professional experience as an attorney? Like, how did you even get that initial appointment?
How did I get into that? Well, I think, and what I tell other people who are interested in getting involved in politics is get yourself known somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I had established a reputation as a community-based lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Representing folks interested in communities, interested in land use. Actually, back then we achieved quite a big thing. We actually got a decision from the Maryland Court of Appeals mm-hmm. that reduced the height of a building in downtown Silver Spring.
And why was that important?
Well, I think it established my credibility as a community representative and someone who had a sense mm-hmm. of what was going on and had some genuine validated interest in making things happen.
So are you from this community? Why is it that you spoke about being involved in the community? Why this community?
Well, this is my community.
Are you? Where were you raised?
I grew up in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And was not involved in politics when I was younger.
Were your parents or any family?
No, not at all. Not at all. It was really... you have to remember, I sort of came of age during the 60s. What happened during the 60s?
Did something happen in the 60s?
Yeah, a lot of things happened. And again, I was never politically active particularly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when, the Vietnam was going on. And a whole generation of us, you cannot imagine
mm-hmm.
what it did to the boomer generation.
Hmm.
The war, the whole thing,
the civil rights movement, women's rights movement,
war,
everything.
Women's rights. You forget, we had Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Bobby Kennedy.
The president was assassinated. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. I mean, these things, I think, affected a whole generation's perception of community and activism and the like. And people who came of age after that time, I think, will never fully appreciate
mm-hmm.
what we lived through.
How did it affect you in particular?
Well, I think it changed us in terms of, and changed me, I suppose, in terms of being more attentive to public policy, being worried about what was going on nationally and internationally, and paying more attention to it. There's always a statement out there, it sort of takes a crisis for people to get galvanized. Mm-hmm. And back in the 60s, there were a lot of crises going on, and we were all learning that things were not exactly the way they seemed.
You know,
and of course, facts that have come out after all of mm-hmm. that, you know, there was Watergate mm-hmm. then. We learned that, you know, JFK actually had an interesting sexual life while he was president. we have come to appreciate and perhaps have concerns about ethics, about policy, and understanding that you need to read between the lines.
Now, there was a latent interest, it sounds like. You went through the 60s, you went through the 70s, but you mentioned that you didn't become politically active until the 80s, right?
Pretty much. I mean, when I was in college, really through my husband, we got involved in some campaigns mm-hmm. And things of that sort.
You met your husband in college?
Yeah. I was in school in Massachusetts when McGovern was running for president. That's the one state that voted for McGovern. I got to cast my first vote.
Huh.
Of course, that was the only state McGovern took
in
that election. But then, you know, like most people, I got busy. I was married. I had children. I was starting a career. And it took me to get to the end of that stage of sort of settling into adulthood before I really got engaged. And I think that's pretty typical.
So did you go to law school down in the D.C. area? Is that what brought you?
No.
You just, how did you end up? I mean, land zoning is a particular area of law that you don't hear, for instance, many high school kids saying, I want to grow up and I want to be a land use attorney.
No, I certainly didn't think of it that way. But actually, when I was in law school, this was in New Jersey, I did take classes with an eminent land use professor because I thought it was interesting.
Hmm.
And then after law school, I actually, ironically, I went to work for a big law firm up in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, everyone who gets out of law school wants to be in litigation. You know, you want to be in court.
Hmm.
Well, I didn't get assigned to that. I got assigned to the real estate department. And, you know, so I had to do really basic land use things like closings, real estate closings and title searches and things like that. But one of the partners had a kid in private school,
mm-hmm.
and it turned out the school was located on land claimed by the Indians. And that...
Native Americans?
Yeah, Native Americans. And so... back then in the 70s, there was a big spate of litigation.
In Maryland?
This was up in Connecticut.
Oh.
But it became an issue across the country
huh.
as a Native American started asserting their rights to land. And there was, and that was sort of my first introduction
mm-hmm.
to those kinds of land use debates. And I've always, I've always enjoyed this stuff. It's mm-hmm. interesting. It's challenging. There's no obvious right or wrong. It's mm-hmm. trying to find a way that accommodates competing interests.
So that's actually quite interesting. Now, you're currently a Montgomery County Council member.
Mm-hmm.
There are 9 council members, and 4 of whom are at large, including you, so representing 1 million people. And oftentimes, voters... often don't turn out in the primary or have difficulties sometimes understanding who's running and who are the candidates and what are the differences and why should I care and why should I vote and how do I know to vote for this person, not that person. Often it comes down to relationships and not necessarily really even a clear understanding of who casts votes differently. And most of the time, a lot of council members, I don't know if you could speak to this, talk or vote in a fairly similar way most of the time. How do you, being a council member and personally knowing of them, how do you differentiate yourself and really understand, you know, how similar are you to the others? How different are you? And how do you figure out what is the right thing for you to do?
Well, that's sort of the nub of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
I've been lucky enough. I'm now in my 4th term.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been lucky enough to really not play this as a purely political effort.
What does that mean?
Which is to just try to figure out the right thing and to vote for it. What I have found, and you're right, the electorate mm-hmm. is not that engaged in what we do, except when it personally affects them. That's pretty standard.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I have found, and because I've been elected successfully four times, I think what matters to people is their general sense of you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Do you trust this person? Do you trust this person to make hard decisions for me and my future?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of what it comes down to in people's gut.
Trust.
Yeah. And I think that was obviously an issue with this presidential election to a certain degree. Who do you trust? Because no one is going to follow the details. It's too hard to explain.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been lucky enough not to play pure politics. I say pure politics played when, you know, a committee on the council has done a lot of work and they've thought about, you could see that the issues have been thoroughly hashed out in a committee analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have typically one council member who just voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be the outlier. And one of the challenges for all of us is the press these days.
Is there much press?
No, and that's the problem. And the people who get the press are the people who vote against things.
Really?
Because that's conflict, that's interesting, that's news. Doing the tedious job of making hard decisions for our future is too boring for the press to cover, by and large. They rarely get into the weeds, which we spend a lot of time in. They rarely take the effort to explain the policy issues. What we try to do it through press releases to frame issues so that they will be explained to the public. We all send out newsletters and the like, but at the end of the day, it's very difficult to get out basic information why eight people voted one way.
Mm-hmm.
The person who gets the press is always the person who didn't agree or chose not to go.
So when you say you don't, when you say you don't play politics, what you mean is you don't make decisions designed to enhance your profile and get you more press.
That's correct.
But what you do try to do is deliberate through the issues, figure out what the right thing is, and then you do try to do the right thing for the public as opposed to the right thing politically for yourself.
That's how I've been able to approach it over the years. And most people do that, but you can tell when we have a situation like that, that someone is doing it just for the politics.
So I don't normally talk about myself, but I have experienced candidate questionnaires.
Oh boy, yeah.
And when a candidate runs for office, many interest groups offer you questionnaires and the opportunity to interview you.
Mm-hmm.
Which may or may not lead to them and that group endorsing you. And what might come to pass is you might say, well, gosh, the Chamber of Commerce has some valid points. But on the other hand, so does the environmental groups, the Legal Conservation Voters and the Sierra Club. And you know, the tax responsibility. And it turns out that all these different groups, when you really get down to it, have serious legitimate points, and they're not all, you know, crackpots, but and the special interests, it turns out, actually represent many real interests. And there are developers and there are community groups, and they all have good points, and they're all trying to advance themselves potentially economically or whatever, but they're also points that potentially could be construed as advancing the public interest as well. And it always strikes me as very difficult to approach that conflict and say, well, you know, you're right. And on the other hand, you're right. So which one am I going to alienate today? How do you approach that difficult conflict of figuring out what exactly is the right thing to do?
Well, you know, you have to listen to folks. Basically, the challenge of decision-making is that certain interest groups want sound bites. They want things to be simple.
They don't want 30 minutes of substance?
They don't want to see a 50-page staff report that lays out the pros and cons. And if you did this, well, this other thing will happen.
Yeah.
And so it's tricky. So what you see, I mean, for me, and during campaign time, we get, you know, an enormous number of these questionnaires, all of which are designed to trap us to some degree or get us to say, for sure, we will never do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or we will always do whatever it is that you want us to do. And if you read the people's answers, I think you would find them, at least the responsible answers, as pretty vague. Because you don't know. And I think it's much easier to say, sure, I will absolutely adhere to whatever it is that you're asking. Will you ever always support every single negotiated contract? That's a standard question from the union community. Will you always oppose new development in my community kind of questions from civic type groups?
Mm-hmm.
You say, absolutely, accept. And that is the challenge of all this. The other thing is, voters are notoriously bad memories. So whatever you might say in a questionnaire
mm-hmm.
or previously is rarely held up against you later on. In fact, I've never seen someone say to one of us, oh, you said you'd do this in 2014 and then you did that in 2015 or 2016. We're not particularly held to account on those questionnaires. And hopefully we've answered them in a responsible way.
So do you try to answer them in an honest way, or do you try to answer them in a way... Well, how about this? Why would politicians feel influenced? Why would politicians feel as though... They ought to respond in a way that the special interest would like them to? Why do you feel pressured? Why would a politician feel pressured to do anything other than just state the truth? Say, look, this is complicated. I have no, you know, this situation could arise in the future and I would be an exception and this would be it. And to really be responsible and thoughtful, why would they feel pressured to not do that, which is more accurate, and instead, bow to what the special interests are requesting? What could the special interests offer you that would influence you?
Well, I don't do that, so I can't say.
Yeah.
Except that I assume that people think that that will earn them the vote and support of that group.
And they could lead, they could give money, or they could do a mailer or give volunteers.
Absolutely. You know, and the other thing, I'm not sure how important endorsements are
mm-hmm.
anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many groups now, how can they bring that to the forefront? How can they actually make have a real impact on voter behavior?
Mm-hmm.
They have to convey that whatever their position is to their members. Of course, with the internet, it's easy these days.
Mm-hmm.
But is that determinative? I don't know. I mean, I don't think you should lie awake at night worrying about it. I think you should be yourself. That's my standard for all of this. Be honest, be yourself, say what you believe and stick to it. If you can, don't lie.
How did you come to create your political identity? There are people on the council who are... So right now, for our listeners, all 9 members of Montgomery County Council are Democrats. But some are more moderate Democrats and some are further to the left on the Democratic on the ideological spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that you found your right, your place?
Being myself. You know, people characterize us one way or the other based on one particular vote, one particular position, and then they say it over and over again, and so people sort of believe you're who you are. But who you, other people say you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way of all things these days. I just try to be myself, try to do the right thing.
Now, you spoke earlier...
I mean, it sounds very simplistic, but I don't think it's that... If you spend all your time trying to make one group happy,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna make a mistake. And you're going to twist yourself into a pretzel. And you're going to make people... angry, and you're going to hopefully despise yourself for being for not being thoughtful about things.
Do you ever struggle with you internally to figure out what is the right thing for you
sure.
in a particular situation?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I lots of times it's just finding a way down the middle. Lots of times it's educating the community of interest about why you're trying to solve this problem and what the issue really is. And sometimes community members get it. Sometimes business community, business people get what you're trying to do. And, you know, it's important to be upfront and frank about what the issues really are. These days, what's tough is that because of the internet, people just get revved up on small points. They don't share the full package of information. And so they get other people all exercised about issues without very good information.
Now,
it's hard to deal with that.
How do voters react to you when you tell them the truth according to how you see it and the full story and why you're not going to do exactly what they've asked of you?
Well, you know, I think, you know, a lot of it, I think, depends on how you speak, how you convey this stuff. I think most people appreciate when they feel respected for having the views that they have. They're more willing, I think, to listen to what the other competing points of information are, and sometimes will actually be useful in helping you forge a solution. We're in the middle of doing that right now with respect to a one community-based issue, and it's been an interesting evolution of at least of a core group of individuals respecting the fact that this is actually more complicated than they thought. But will they convey that to the other people who are quite exercised about the concept and they've been revved up by other advocates and they're not at the listening stage? Well, one of the challenges that we have is when people come to speak to us as elected officials or to testify, they're there to tell their story. They're not there to listen to other people. They're not there to learn.
Should they be?
Well, I would like to think that they would, but, you know, largely they're performing in public. They've worried a lot about how they present their point, and they're going to do it. And, you know, that's the point of public hearings. But and for us, it's a listening. but that's not always the case for the community. You know, they're there to say, you know, I'm mad about this and I want you to fix it, whatever. And then they're done. And they're not listening to the other person who's saying, well, you need to do this because of these reasons. You know, they're not there to compromise. We're the ones who have to find a path for everyone.
So you, as we near the end of the podcast, I'd like to reflect more about your motivations. You mentioned earlier that you were originally inspired or drew inspiration from the ruckus of the 60s and 70s. And the national issues that came to the forefront. Yet you are what we call a local politician, right? You're not on the state level or the federal level. You're in the county level. Why did you not seek a seat in Congress as opposed or a state wide elected office? Why seek the county council, right? Because it's not. It affects people's lives in a much more direct and concrete way, but it's not the poetry of the national narrative that so inspired you in the very beginning.
Well, first of all, here in Maryland, in Montgomery County in particular, we have a great deal of power. It's much more the case in Maryland than in many other jurisdictions, what local governments and local counties can do. We have we have more power than the legislature in terms of revising the budget, establishing policies, implementing sorts of things. And so we have a lot of power and authority that's pretty unique across the country. I've always liked local government the best because it's real. And you can actually make a difference and see it through. You can actually, I can hear your problem and get it addressed, or get you to help you understand why it can't be addressed in the way that you'd like it to be. This is how people live. The bigger picture issues, you know, they're important. There's no question about it, and they're very valid. But you're going to spend years and years and in office to get to a position where you can actually do something.
Mm-hmm.
Power and authority in the state legislatures and in the Congress, for sure, it's governed by a small clique of people who anoint you to be able to do something or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it can take years to get into a position of leadership locally. Once you're elected, you're in a position to offer legislation immediately, create a public debate, and actually get things done.
So that has been Nancy Florine, who talks about her life in public service as and her motivations as one where finding a problem and actually concretely addressing that problem and making it better and presenting solutions to constituents who placed her into office to get things done is really rewarding. And the fact that she can take ownership over a problem and get things passed and pushed through in her legislative body instead of needing to work with leadership, because again, for instance, in the Maryland General Assembly, you have 188 members. In the U.S. Congress, you have 535 members of both houses. And in the Montgomery County Council, you have 9 members, plus the county executive. So you have a lot more power. You have a larger proportion of the legislature, of the legislative powers in your hands. So she enjoys getting things done, and she has more of a direct influence on constituents' lives. And she just tries to do the right thing as best as she knows how. So thank you so much for joining us for episode 47, Public Interest Podcast, with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. Thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you next time.